As we discussed, even the smallest scale foraging societies are disproportionately influenced by prestigious individuals whose status is rooted in success or skill in locally valued domains like hunting or warfare. In traditional societies living in richer environments, prestigious men use their persuasive abilities, influence, and generosity to expand their sphere of influence in competition with other prestigious big men. In some places, these competitions result in epic feasts at which these individuals seek to enhance their prestige by giving away more than their competitors, crushing them with their productivity, organizational skills, and generosity. These big men, which is often the literal local translation, can accumulate substantial influence in their lifetimes, though when they die, little of this influence passes to their descendants. Similarly, understanding dominance helps illuminate the psychological underpinnings of hierarchical institutions, such as those based on hereditary chiefs or divine kings. Many modern institutions harness both forms of status as they aspire to promote individuals, based on merit, skill, success, and knowledge, into positions of dominance where they control the costs and benefits to others. For example, salaries, promotions, and vacations. Effective institutions often harness or suppress aspects of our status psychology in non-intuitive ways. Take the Great Sanhedrin, the ancient Jewish court and legislature that persisted for centuries at the beginning of the Common Era. When deliberating on a capital case, its 70 judges would each share their views, beginning with the youngest and lowest-ranking member, and then proceed in turn to the wisest and most respected member. This is an interesting norm because, one, it's nearly the opposite of how things would go if we let nature take its course, and, two, it helps guarantee that all the judges got to hear the least varnished views of the lower-ranking members, since otherwise the views of the lowest-status individuals would be tainted by both the persuasive and deferential effects of prestige and dominance. Concerns with dominance may have been further mitigated by, one, a sharing of the directorship of the Sanhedrin by two individuals, who could be removed by a vote of the judges, two, the similar social class and background of judges, and three, social norms that suppressed status displays. These customs are not something that smart people often just think up, and even when they do, such practices are hard to implement. This is so because the high-status members of such deliberative bodies tend to believe their views deserve special attention and want the opportunity to speak first to increase their influence on outcomes. Converging with their colleagues, low-status members are often disinclined to speak first, out of a fear of looking ill-informed or of contradicting the high-status individuals who haven't yet spoken. Thus, neither high nor low-status individuals would necessarily be particularly supportive of a low-to-high-status speaking rule, unless they understood something of status psychology and were more concerned about the institution's long-term success than their personal influence and careers. I'll close this chapter with a lesson in leadership that reflects an intuitive grasp of prestige from the English explorer James Cook. In 1768, as Lieutenant Cook was preparing to depart for the South Pacific, scurvy continued to plague the British Navy, as it had for centuries, killing many sailors. Scurvy symptoms start with spongy gums and a general malaise, which is followed by bleeding from the nose and mouth and the loss of teeth. If vitamin C is not consumed, this decline ends in death. On the suggestion of an English physician, Cook obtained a large supply of sauerkraut, which we know now will prevent scurvy. Since sauerkraut represented a rather pungent and unusual deviation from the traditional maritime fare, Cook worried that his sailors would refuse to eat it, and knew that neither force nor education were likely to succeed in creating an enduring dietary shift. Instead, he ordered that plates of sauerkraut be dressed and served at the officers' mess, but not at the sailors' mess. Within a week of setting sail, inferring that the officers had a taste for sauerkraut, the rank-and-file crew began actively requesting servings of sauerkraut. Very quickly, sauerkraut became so desired that it had to be rationed. Cook finished his expedition with not a single case of scurvy, a feat theretofore unheard of among Europeans during such long ocean voyages.
So, that wraps up this week for The Secret of Success for Joseph Henrich. It's too much to fit into one show. I thought I might go over because of the commentary that I put in, and I know how much time you need for everything together. But only 6 minutes over, so not too bad. But so we have to, it's going to kind of spill over into next week. We'll cover the rest of the book, and it hit some really good high points next week, so tune in for next week. This when the book gets exciting. I think the second half of the book is better than the first half of the book, and lots of different things. He'll cover creds, which we've covered before on the radio show, credibility enhancing displays, just creds. Excuse me. Some stuff about honor cultures, which we covered last week. Also cover some other things as well about how connection between rewarding individuals as opposed to trying to build cultures. Some stuff about limits of markets. It connects to Michael Sandel's book, which was the largest segment we had. It was a 12-part series that we covered in 12 weeks by Michael Sandel called Justice. There's another book that he wrote called The Moral Limits of Markets. And this book kind of covers some of the pieces that also Michael Sandel covers in his book. So that'll be interesting. So the most interesting part about this book is how broad it kind of covers the subjects that we've been covering on my show in psychology and behavioral psychology and markets and economics and new thoughts in economics. And gives a very distinct or better explanation in my book of how it explains some of the weirdness that occurs in our economy, how humans are often irrational. And he does a very good explanation of why our culture really explains some of those irrational behaviors in our economy, even explains certain elements of our economy extremely well. So it's and how economic works. So I think it's a very interesting book, and we're covering the second part next week. So stay tuned for that. So that is the end of the show. As always, you can reach out to my email that we have set up for the radio show called Radio Lyceum at protonmail.com. That's RadioLyceum. Just in case you want to know how to spell Lyceum, I wouldn't if you heard me just talking about it. So anyway, I'll play a little bit more music just while I'm wrapping up stuff around here. We won't be doing too much mix, probably pretty quick, just maybe a few songs. And what we're going to start out with, let's see. So Peaceful by Jeremy. So keep on listening to the automation after I'm done. WRV FM Brolden. But I'll be back next week, 8 to 10 for Fridays. So I'll see you guys next week.
Shannon Cohen, begin for you.
Have you heard of the idea of collective care? It's seeing each other's well-being, especially emotional health, as a shared responsibility of a group or community, rather than the lone task of an individual. Here are some examples of collective care. Listen to care, not to fix. Play, laugh, or create with each other. Contribute to a mutual aid fund. Mask up in public indoor spaces to help protect those at higher risk from COVID. And don't forget about you. Take time to rest and restore yourself. Take an actual lunch break. Take a nap. Take a walk. Say no. This message is brought to you by your collectively caring DJs at WRUV FM Burlington.
did it.
Night on the third floor, windows open. It was very hot, so people were outside. And suddenly, the TV went off. The light went off. All of a sudden, the noise outside in the street quickly stopped for a second, and suddenly you heard a... Everybody just seemed to realize something had happened.
Office. I was catching up on some paperwork and having a cup of coffee, and the lights dimmed. The emergency generator roared on and somebody shouted blackout, you know.
Of the blackout hit.
for the turnstile to open so that the finish journeys were done more than 12 hours earlier. Some 800,000 people had been stranded in the subway cars by the blackout, but there was no panic and there were no major injuries reported. So the blackout will be a night that New Yorkers will ever forget.
Now, direct from CBS News, this special Radio Net Alert news report.
A major power blackout has hit New York City and surrounding communities.
Chuck, if he's good, what can you tell us about the feel for Midtown Manhattan?
Well, George, there are people directing traffic at the intersections. I assume many of them are policemen. Some of them, obviously, are just volunteers, people who wanted to pitch in. But in general, people are taking it in good spirit and almost a little conviviality going on.
Where were you when the lights
went out? Ready to see the music hall.
What happened to the music hall?
All of a sudden, the lights went out. And no pigeon, no sound, nothing. And made an announcement about the power was off in the whole city.
And you're waiting for the subway now?
No, there's no subway running.
So what are you doing here?
I'm on TV.
You're on. Get on. All I can tell you is there was a severe electrical storm to the north. Lights totally went out about 15 minutes ago.
All five boroughs are affected, so that's the word. 7 million people are now without power. It's 12:02 on WABC in New York. We switch now to Steve O'Brien.
Thank you, George. Walking into one of the neighborhood establishments, we found still an atmosphere of of extreme levity, considering the situation. Anyway, people are feeling no pain in most of the establishments around the area.
The lights went out, and the beer came out, and the candles, and we had a block party.
Emergency lights, but it wasn't enough. I mean, so we started bringing candles in. In hindsight, I don't think that was a good idea because the candles also gave off heat. Air conditioning now has been out for since 9:30, and but still, some people we had to ask to leave. It's that kind of thing, you know. They liked the champagne part.
Somebody shot a blackout, you know. And somebody shot a blackout. Thank you.
sort of sounds like the Titanic when we talk about did the band play on, you know. We had a three-piece combo of piano, bass, and guitar. The piano continued on.
We gon' take her back in style. My man said it best. And we gon' carry on the tradition. Something like this. Wherever you at, wherever you are, wherever you at, wherever you are.